Yes, it is Friday, October 25th, everybody, 2019. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. On today's show, Trump's Justice Department prepares to eat itself. Turns out that Bill Barr's globetrotting was part of an agenda to prop up right-wing conspiracy theories about the origin of the Russia probe. Look out, deep state. Here come the Russian nesting dolls. Looks like Matt Taibbi's claim from a couple weeks ago that we're in a permanent coup does not sound so crazy right about now. Republicans pull a media stunt to distract media attention from Tuesday's closed-door testimony by the U.S. diplomat and by the top U.S. diplomat in Ukraine, Bill Taylor. Because that didn't work out so well. And it's actually, I shouldn't say distract media attention, more like give Fox News a storyline that they could run with instead of the Bill Taylor testimony. Anyways, the House Intelligence Committee was preparing to depose Deputy Assistant Defense Secretary Laura Cooper about the expanding Ukraine scandal when over 40 House Republicans burst into the confidential hearing room and made a scene. And 14 of those members already had access to that hearing room, making their claims about being excluded a bit rich. And Pennsylvania's own Scott Perry was one of them. Gotta love it. Bernie Sanders gets a huge endorsement from AOC and Michael Moore last weekend. His Queens rally last Saturday saw crowds of around 30,000 people, the largest campaign rally of the political season, 35,000 if you want to go with Michael Brooks's estimate, just saying. I think Michael Brooks is going to add 5,000 to everything right about now when it comes to Bernie. Then Sanders turns around and tells Ryan Grimm of The Intercept that if he's elected, he would revive criminal prosecutions of corporate CEOs using long-neglected provisions of the Sherman Act. Yeah, that's that antitrust act from way back when that people said, yeah, we're just going to kind of go after fining the corporations, but we're going to go easy on the CEOs. But the Sherman Act actually has provisions to hold CEOs accountable through criminal prosecution. Let's go, Bernie. Elizabeth Warren joined Chicago teachers on the picket line this week. That's right. Yeah, we got another presidential candidate that put her comfortable shoes on and got out there on the picket lines just like Bernie. Something that Obama could not do in his entire two terms of his presidency, by the way, despite his promise. That still sticks in my craw a bit, I have to say. Well, Joe Biden's fundraising basically atrophies, right? As some Democratic Party donors, they start getting a little nervous and they're begging to start a super PAC where they can dump their money into to support Biden. Or my guess is Buttigieg. But, and Biden was a little distracted this week, though. I mean, he and his campaign forgot to buy the web address and the social media accounts for his Latinx outreach campaign. You got this campaign, big launch called Todos con Biden. Oh, everyone with Biden. Well, now the Trump campaign people own it. And so now if you go to todosconbiden.com, it takes you to Latinos for Trump. That's just rich. Again. Oh, boy. A surgeon Pete Buttigieg hires foreman Goldman Sachs exec to run his policy shop. Yeah, it looks like it's got familiar territory over there for Wall Street. That's where they're going to put their money is what I'm saying. More wildfires erupt in California after a PG&E transmission line broke and set the Sonoma County fire ablaze. Over 50,000 residents have already had to evacuate. I didn't check the latest in terms of its containment, but it was completely without containment as of yesterday. A judge holds Secretary of Education Betty DeVos in contempt for forcing students scammed by Corinthian colleges to continue to pay their loans. The judge orders DeVos to pay $100,000 to start. Mitch McConnell gets the cold shoulder from a pallbearer at Elijah Cummings' memorial service. That's right. Trump, he was all class about this one too as well as he decided to skip the memorial altogether. Not that he was really missed. But the pallbearer was pretty great. There's some great video out there of watching Mitch McConnell put out his hand. Watch the pallbearer, who was a friend of Elijah Cummings, not take the hand in return. See ya, Mitch. And today's local folk, oh wait, should I say, the Mack trucks end, this is actually a nice bridge, the Mack truck strike ended this morning, as of 9 a.m., I guess. Details of the agreement have not yet been released, but it looks like workers held the line on keeping jobs here in the U.S. Today's PA focus, it's Groundhog Day for the Charter's Appeals Board. I think every day is Charter's Appeals Board Groundhog Day. But the CAB's dysfunction is so bad, it has one charter school asking cab members to deny their appeal so they can pack up, get out of the board's purgatory, and get their appeal into Commonwealth Court. Please, please, please deny our appeal. And Senator Mastriano and Representative Borowitz, now there's a dynamic duo. They introduced a six-week abortion ban this week in front of a packed media center. You saw that coming, didn't you, everybody? I mean, it is the season. It's right before Christmas.
We got to stop the war on Jesus.
That's right. You got to do it all. I guess you got to build it from the ground up. Ground up. And today's last call, we got researchers at Quantum, or Google AI Quantum, and researchers at UC Santa Barbara said they achieved a long hoped for milestone in quantum computing. It's called quantum supremacy. And their newly published paper shows that their prototype quantum computer could perform a complex math problem, solve it, compute it, that would take today's supercomputers about 10,000 years to complete. It's pretty freaking crazy. It's pretty crazy. If this goes through and it looks like it's gonna hold up, well, this could fundamentally change the way that computers work and their roles. Now, IBM got a little pissed off about this, right? Because they were testing it against their supercomputers. And IBM said, no, it would not take them 10,000 years. It would take our best supercomputers about 3,000 years to do that. They said that Google didn't kind of correctly do it. So, okay, 3,000 years. Okay, I'll give you the 3,000 years. All right, if that's what you really want. And with this morning, NASA Chief Administrator Jim Bridenstine took the live stream to talk about the Artemis moon mission slated for 2024. This is really gearing up. We saw that, we talked about this last week. The new spacesuits have kind of been launched. He was out there this morning. I didn't get a chance to watch this, the live stream, but I'll give you some updates on that next week. And we got Free Will Brewing releases. Yes, last week, remember we talked about this, the cranberry wheat? Well, that got delayed after the brewmaster said, wanted to give it a little bit more time. Well, the wait should be worth it, and it is over. Cranberry wheat is now available at both locations. And tomorrow, we'll also see the release of the first big stout of the season from Free Will. Sharing Size is an imperial oatmeal stout with chocolate, peanut butter, and milk sugar. It looks, coming in at 10.4 ABV. And this Sunday is the October edition of Sour Sunday at Free Will Brewing. There'll be 12 sours on tap, as well debuting two offerings and bottles that we'll get into in today's last call. I want to remind everybody to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can also stream the show live at freespeech.org. And you can also follow Rick's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast. I want to remind everybody, if you want a progressive future, we need progressive media. You can support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. Remember, keep the media in the movement and the movement in the media for as little as $5 a month. patreon.com/rcpress today. Well, hey, Sean, man, how you been?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. I got to say, you were kind of all kind of like full head of steam this morning when we got on before the show. So at least you're ready for the weekend.
Yeah, no, I am. I felt like this week I feel like I was just screaming into the void.
I know the feeling, man. I know
going, yeah, just going to like just wasting my life at hearings and shit like that. And, you know, so that's over with. And then Monday, 8 o'clock in the morning, looking forward to another hearing.
Excellent.
Start the week with a climate denying hearing.
Nothing like a climate denying hearing to get your week off on the right foot.
Looking forward to that. So I have my weekend looking forward to starting off my work week with an 8 a.m. bullshit hearing on Monday.
Yeah. Well, you know, at least it's going to be headed, but at least by some reasonable people, right?
Yeah. So.
Oh, you got to love that.
So the people from the
Daryl Metcalf.
So the people there will be good visuals. The people from like Karen Farron and all them from Better Path Coalition, they will be showing up wearing tinfoil hats.
No, good. That'll protect them at least. It'll keep them protected from
the stupid
Daryl Metcalf.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, pretty crazy, pretty crazy. Well, this week, as you can hear, just in the lead up today, kind of our introduction, there's a ton of news happened.
A lot happened. Yeah, you might say.
What's that?
Said a lot happened this past week.
Well, yeah, I mean, a ton happened, and I guess, gonna group some of this stuff together. But I mean, I think like last night, just in case you have not kind of read this or kind of seen this story posted yet. The Justice Department announced that basically through their I think it's a district attorney or whatever, or the regional district attorney from Connecticut, is basically launching a criminal investigation into the origins of the Russia probe, right? So what this amounts to basically is that they're going to look at, you know, this all is going to allow them, number one, to subpoena people, number two, to set up a impanel a grand jury, right, to look at filing criminal charges against the people who first alerted the government that there was an issue going on with Russia hacking our elections and some sort of kind of connection with the Trump campaign, right? Now, what you need to know about this story is that this is based upon a far right conspiracy theory that basically says that the Obama campaign, the Obama people, because remember, Obama was not running, right? The Obama people.
Wait. Who is Obama?
Right. Well, it turns out he is a deep state operative.
I never heard of this Obama fellow.
Yes. Well, yeah. He pulled the mask off and turns out that he is a deep state operative. No, but basically through this kind of like crazy set of Russian nesting dolls, they went over there and they planted a story that would then eventually make it back to the Trump administration. And it would make it appear that Russia was actually interfering with the elections when they're not. So Russia's the victim in this narrative. And the Trump administration, right, was actually also an innocent victim because they were not the ones who hacked the DNC and kind of probed for a thing. It was actually the Obama people in the deep state that were the ones that were doing this and then claiming it was the Trump administration, and the Trump administration is totally victimized by this process.
Okay.
That's the really rough sketch of this. Right. So if you remember, like Bill Barr and Rudy Giuliani have been doing all this kind of like globetrotting. The most recent report, New York Times had this article last night where Bill Barr had gone over to Italy to talk to some of their secret, you know, secret police people or whatever, their intelligence people, right? And basically say to get confirmation about what the United States intelligence officers actually did in Italy, right? And the figures from Italy, right, the government officials from Italy, like, went to the media because the media asked them about this. Well, what the hell is that meeting about? And they're basically coming out and basically saying, like, the guy's off his rocker. They're asking me about stuff that has nothing to do with anything that has ever gone on. And he's asking for this kind of confirmation. So basically, they're looking for some way to establish some version of quote unquote facts, because you cannot like impanel a grand jury or kind of launch criminal investigations unless it's based on some sort of fact, right? So the claim is going to be that there's like factual witnesses, right, as part of these kind of globetrotting from Bill Barr and Rudy Giuliani and who the hell knows who else, that is saying all this stuff is a big sham. The Ukraine stuff is a sham. The launch of the Russia investigation is a sham. And it's all the Obama people that are behind it.
So, like, now this was going on before Ukraine obviously unfolded.
Correct.
Unraveled. This was going on in the months. So, were they like actually looking for people to prosecute here, or were they looking to just hold a mock trial that would probably go nowhere in order to gin up media speculation, like the way he was able to do it so easily with Clinton cash or with other conspiracy theories in 2016, and just let the media cycle? Let the media irresponsibly take these conspiracy theories and run with them as if they're fact.
That's exactly what it looks like.
Yeah, and report on them as if they were fact.
That is exactly what it looks like. A matter of fact, it looks like they're running the same play.
Yeah, and give them the victory of a headline versus, you know, actually reading through that this is just conspiracy theory bullshit.
Exactly. Right. So I think that that's entirely what's going on here. Right. I don't think there's any expectation, or do they really care if there is any
validity to these claims.
No, not at all. Right. All you need is enough to kind of start this grand jury and start some, say, subpoenas and some having some hearings. Right. And produce this show. And we know that the media is set up to just cover that. Right. And now you have two
without doing any critical thinking.
Exactly. And just like you had last time, now you can set up two parallel things. Look, the Democrats are running these hearings, but look, the Democrats did this thing too as well. Right. They're both having hearings. They've done bad things. Right. It's that false equivalent stuff that's being set up all over again.
I think we're now too far into the Ukraine mess where anything that comes out with them, is just going to be looked at with illegitimacy at this point. Like I said it before and I'll say it again, like I am at the point where you can't just impeach over Ukraine. Like I think we're going to have to start looking, I mean, like with Turkey and what other dealings have been going on.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And then also, yeah, I mean, we didn't even put this in the notes, but this was commentary what's going around today. It looks like Lindsey Graham's trial balloon in the Senate
flopped.
Fizzled.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's actually a bad fucking story for Trump.
Yeah.
Where you had nine Republican senators pretty much say, fuck you,
right,
to Trump in the Senate. Like that just showed them that, you know, like there's 11 more, you get 11 more Republicans on board, you can actually convict Trump in the Senate. Yeah. No, it's.
No, that, exactly. Which is what I think.
Do you think that was Lindsey Graham's intention? Was to find a way of showing Trump that, hey, your support's flopping right now?
No, I don't think that was it at all.
Or do you think Lindsey Graham actually thought he had the support for this, and we're going to go forward with a resolution that we didn't whip up any votes for, and just got dressed down on the Senate in the Senate over?
Well, here's the thing. I think Lindsey Graham plays every side of that, of what you just laid out. Right. I think Lindsey Graham is about kind of like trying to like stoke the base and position himself as a kind of key player without this. So basically you have, I'm sure that the initial thing was, OK, what we're going to do is we're going to keep on doing what we've been doing. Right. We're going to put up these kind of, you know, as you said, trial balloons. We're going to try to say that, you know, these, you know, whatever the latest thing is, we're going to put it out there in the Senate. We're going to bring it in the media as these talking points. The media is going to kind of garble things and it's going to kind of muddy the waters across the board. Right. It might make it to the Senate or might not. Right. But it's the idea about having this thing introduced and kind of moving that story. And that basically gets him like approval from Trump. Right. But, you know, Graham, more than anyone else, has got to know, right, that there's discontent within the Republican Party. So I wouldn't be surprised if Graham puts this out there also as a way of gauging where the Republicans are. Right. Because basically what you do is that,
because 9 is a substantial number.
Right. But what you've also done is you put targets on their backs when it comes to for the Trump administration and those folks. Right. So now you know who your traitors are, quote unquote. Right. If you got to play this like a mob script.
Yeah.
Right. You got to play like a mob script. Right. You want to beat the bushes.
Smoke them out.
Exactly. And you want to find out who are the people that are going to not be on board. And now you've got targets on their back. That's what this is. Right. And so Graham gets both sides of this. Right. One, he's the guy who's going out there, for the boss.
So right? He's the lackey.
Well, not just the lackey, right? I mean, he's doing business, right? So he's going out there, he's doing business for the boss, he's doing what the boss wants, and now the boss is going to sit back and is going to find out, like, well, who's going to get on there, is going to play ball, where the things are going to start to break, and I guarantee you that's where the pressure is going to start to be felt. You're going to start seeing those names show up in Trump campaigns. You're going to see that kind of perhaps even in terms of money and any kind of primary challenges and things like this for any of those folks who are up for election. I don't know if there's any of those among that group that are. But you know what it is. Now, on the flip side of it, I think that's the gameplay.
And now you're also putting a target on people's back who votes for it, especially if you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, say like Susan Collins.
Right.
In a seat like that where, I mean,
she's already on shaky ground.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I think like 3 months ago, the Senate, you would probably say the Senate was out of play. You know, I've thought the Senate was going to be a lift no matter what going into this. I think it's a lock at this point. I don't know.
A lock to take the Senate, you're saying?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think you can easily flip the seats to take the Senate at this point. I mean, Arizona is going to be a pickup, probably. Like, you have some demographics are switching in the Southwest where you might be able to pick up seats. I don't know. You normally would never, like never have done before.
No, it's a good point. I mean, I don't know if I'd be in the lock camp yet. I think it's still going to be like a huge uphill fight. But I think you're right that there's.
I think it's 50-50 at this point.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it's going to depend on campaigning right now, and it's going to depend on what kind of, you know. Well, no, I mean, I think it's going to be like in the campaigns in the organization. I mean, the fact is that, you know, the Arizona is a real soft spot precisely because of all the immigration stuff, right, and all the camps that have been established. And that's actually, you know, it's been mobilized. I mean, look, this is what Sam Cedar has been talking about in the Majority Report for a while. This is going to be an election that's about mobilization, right, not about kind of turning like moderate Democrats into this. No, it's about mobilizing your base and getting your base out, right, and expanding that base that has not already been tapped into, which includes things like registering people to vote, making sure people got rides to the polls, protecting kind of the electoral process is really where it's going to come down to. So, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, I think right now, especially the fact that a lot of these senators now, they're in a tough spot, right? Republican senators, because they can't just so easily just jump on the Trump wagon and make sure that their seat is there, because now you've got their own people are starting to bolt, and you know, we're seeing polling for both impeachment and removal of Trump as president cracking the 50% mark, and that's just enormous. And this is before there's been any public hearings yet.
Yeah. No. And yeah. Like. I mean, yeah. I guess where else can we go into?
No, I mean,
like
just,
Bill
I mean,
Taylor. Like, yeah, I mean, Trump's. I mean, I think Trump's toast in the House on the impeachment stuff. Like, it's going to be interesting to see how the Democrats play this out at this point. I mean, I am all for one just using a fucking hammer.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah,
I mean, that's a sledge,
by the way.
Yeah, I think at this point, that's what just needs to be done. You take a sledgehammer. And you just keep on beating away, and you know I mean Taibbi wrote a article about this a couple weeks ago, and you know, like, yeah, we actually, this popped up in the conversation yesterday, like what we saw at the House Republicans this week with the SCIF room. Yeah, they're Freedom Caucus assholes, but these are people who are going to be leading the fucking coup,
right?
Like, that's what we should be worried about.
Right. And that's like, what that was about, right?
I mean, that's what that was about. We have a bunch of idiots, yep, leading the coup.
Yep.
You got, like, you and got who, Matt who's going to stand, right, up and say no to Perry, Gates, and all that?
Yeah, no, that's it. That's just it. I mean, what that was, ultimately, that was a show for, you know, the glorious leader. Right. I mean, that was the, you know, we are your brown shirts. Like, we are, you know, with it kind of inside the machine.
Yeah, right?
We are the ones there. And the fact is that, like, you know, you saw like Getz and Gates, or however the hell you say his name, right, and a bunch of these Republicans who kind of staged this stunt come out afterwards like, it's all happening behind closed doors in the shadows. They're trying to institute blah, 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 institute this coup. And really, they're the ones, right? I mean,
it's
a process argument, what's going on, but they go into this.
And no, they're the ones who set up the process.
Right.
And vote past the process.
Right. I mean, you even had the House Sergeant of Arms had to basically come to clear them out of that room, because the SCIF is something that's supposed to, no recording devices allowed in. There's no electronic devices that are allowed in, precisely because these are the most sensitive and confidential stuff gets discussed within there. And we should say, like 14 of Republicans have already, they have permission to go in there and be
Scott
part of
it. And Scott Perry is one of them, because he's on these committees.
Exactly. So he can be there as part of that. And some of them have been there. Some of them have just not shown up, but their legal teams have been there, right? They get equal time in terms of questioning people to all the depositions that are being put forward. So the whole idea that this is happening and nobody knows what's going on is ridiculous, right? That's number one. But number two, this is about that kind of that show of force for the president to say, we are the people that have got your back. Right. And they go into this space in order to kind of disrupt the hearings. Say, we want in there too as well. But now, what's his face? Adam Schiff basically has to take the witness out. Right. They were just about to talk to Laura Cooper, had to take her out of that room. Right. To stop any kind of discussion there. And then they had to go in and they had to postpone any additional hearings while they went back in and swept the room. right? Because you could basically look. Who do you know? These
planet
people,
bug.
Exactly. These people. That's exactly why they had to go and sweep the room, because you don't know these people going here. They were on their cell phones in the skiff and kind of like, you know, calling out and things like this. Oh, who's to say that somebody didn't leave behind some recording device? So they had to just go back in and sweep the entire thing. That's the state that we're at. And that's why the Taibbi piece that you kind of, you know, brought to my attention this morning, right? I think it's not so crazy to be thinking about.
And I mean, like, Taibbi is writing from the premise, like, you're going to regret the decision of having an impeachment versus just waiting to vote for him in 2020. Like, that's just it up front. But I feel like from reading it, like, I'm not in that argument. I believe in accountability. Believe we should be impeaching him, and we should be doing everything we can to get him out of office as quickly as possible, whether it's impeachment or voting. I think that's just it. But like with Taibbi, Taibbi talks about, you know, like he lived through a bunch of coups while reporting on in Russia, and it's just like, you know, like this is not a fun situation to be living through.
Right.
And it's like, it's high stakes football, political football, with one side winning and the other side not.
Right. And it's, you know, in some ways the reason, you know, the idea that we have of how a coup works, right, it tends to be this very dramatic thing. So that's the only time, you know, oh, my God, a coup is being staged. But the thing is that why both what Taibbi says and you've had like Masha Gessen has been sounding the alarm on this, right, since Trump got elected, right, about what things that happen in terms of like the rise of authoritarian states.
You're already establishing this and cementing it through the federal court system,
right,
not just the
exactly
Supreme
what
Court.
Point I was going to. Right, exactly.
I mean, like, we are cementing this through the federal courts right now with these appointments, people getting benches. We're doing it, Trump's doing it right now with, you know, gutting of public sector unions and federal unions, workers and stuff like that. No, they're systematically destroying any public institution they can that will challenge any of their power.
And then when you basically say you basically put the Justice Department to work, right, in order to protect the president, right, so that go in and looking at filing criminal investigations of the CIA, of the FBI, right, of all the people that were involved in this, and basically ordering them to have to kind of appear for subpoenas and hand over documents, right? Trump has already given Barr the permission to declassify anything that he wants to see. Right. So he can basically say to the CIA, OK, I know that it's classified and top secret, but I have the authority to declassify that and I'm going to declassify it. This is a slow moving process. Right. But it's a consolidation. It's happening before our eyes. You know, and this is one of the reasons why there's this book that we talked about this before. This is a short little book. It's like, I'm just going to forget the name of it, but basically it's like, you know, the things to recognize in the rise of authoritarian things. It's a really short book that came out shortly. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. I actually saw this. I think Rachel Maddow had him on a couple weeks ago.
He came on. I mean, we talked about this on the podcast like in 2016. Yeah. After I'd read that.
Like,
book.
This was a Facebook post that people said, no, you need to turn into a book, and he did.
Yeah, exactly. I'll look for the name and see. At the very least, talk about it next week. But this is one thing I want to give. One of the things that he says is that you have to stand up to power. That's the number one thing, and this is why I give all the credit in the world to Marie Yovanovitch. Right, she was the former ambassador Ukraine, and she is the first one, right, the first like top profile person in like kind of the Ukraine scandal, who basically said, you know, they told her do not go and testify, and she was like, she walked head up, escorted, and she testified. And I think her testimony, right, is what basically broke some of the floodgates. That is why we get Bill Taylor, right, the U.S. diplomat from Ukraine, basically willing to testify and release a 14-page statement documenting the kind of the corruption and abuse of power and the quid pro quo stuff that that the Trump administration was doing with Ukraine. And those people are absolutely critical in this process, right, to basically have them come forward and actually tell their story, even though they're being told not to do so. So, yeah. And this is what's playing out, right? I mean, right kind of in slow motion in front of our eyes.
Yeah, and these aren't like liberals that are stepping forward. No, these are career diplomats who were appointed by Republicans. You know, it's...
Yep.
Yeah, and have been working in government for the past 30, 40 years.
Yep, exactly. So I don't know. Lots of stuff going on. So this is going to be. I mean, obviously, this is not the end. this is going to be kind of ongoing quite a bit. So let's talk a little bit about the stuff goings on, say, in the presidential race. I mean, like I mentioned that, you got Bernie with that huge rally. Did you see any of that, Sean?
I did. I watched AOC's speech and I watched Bernie's speech. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was absolutely incredible.
I mean, it felt like a passing of the torch moment.
Yeah.
Pretty much like, hey, you want the leader of your movement? I think he pretty much has crowned AOC the heir to the movement he's built.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, and that's the way it felt like from watching it. And I mean, who is there anyone else that's better?
No. It was something. So, I mean, that was incredible. Michael Moore's speak. You know what? One thing that I have to say is that one of the things that I noticed watching some of the people get up and speak for kind of in support of Bernie about what Bernie's campaign meant to them. What was remarkable to me is that there were times that I even felt like this, like, the sense of like, oh my God, I can't believe they're saying this, right? Precisely because it's the they were saying the kind of things, kind of progressive, even in some cases radical, ways of kind of thinking about our future and what's possible in our country. And they were talking about how important that stuff is, and they were saying it like unabashed and unapologetically. And that's the kind of stuff that we have like basically not been allowed to say, right? It seems for a long time, and we've kind of disciplined ourselves that, you know, that kind of talk is not the kind of talk that can build kind of a national movement. So it was quite something, I have to say. But, you know, in the meantime, so you've got that rally. That was a huge thing. Sanders continues to roll out plans, as does Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren was on the picket lines with Chicago teachers this week. She's released a new education plan. And, you know, a new national poll came out. The CNN poll, I'm sorry, a Quinnipiac poll that just came out. And that's showing Warren with a 7-point lead nationally. Go ahead. Sorry.
I want to ask a quick question. That CNN poll, you think that was an outlier poll then?
It may be.
The CNN poll that had Biden up plus 14. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it looks like.
That was a shocking, like, yeah.
It was strange, right? And I think that, so if you look at, for example, Real Clear Politics, you look at their overall average, that's got Biden at a plus 5.4 over the recent pollings. But if you take that one poll out, right, which is kind of like, it just does not fit the trend of anything else that's going on in the national polls. And then I think you're basically talking about a dead heat at this point. Now, for the Bernie folks, I mean, Bernie is like, at the national level, is really hovering right around that kind of like 17-16 kind of percentage points, right? But what's happening is that the top is coming down, right? So that you're seeing a real three-way race kind of happening here. Now, the most recent Iowa polls, right, on the other hand, is the Iowa State University poll had Warren at 8, plus 8 in the state, right? Mm-hmm. The previous poll from USA Today had Biden plus 1, and before then the polling was having was tied right across the board. Right. So you had, if you look at the Iowa State poll, it has Warren at 28, Biden at 12, Buttigieg at 20, and Bernie at 18. So in other words, in the Iowa State poll, you've got Buttigieg now moving into second place behind Warren. And so that is kind of fascinating. If you look at the overall average, you're still talking about Warren is now on top at 22, an average of 22 percentage points, Biden at 18, Buttigieg at 15.8, and Sanders at 15.3. Now, after watching that rally in Queens and kind of seeing some of the stuff that's on the ground, it's going to be really fascinating to see what happens in the early states when we get to the primaries and the caucuses, because Bernie's fundraising is insane. The number of volunteers and on the ground folks, people that are on the ground actually working for those campaigns, is insane compared to every other campaign, with the exception of maybe Warren, right? Because Warren's, it continues to grow. But I have a gut feeling that his numbers do not reflect how he's going to do in those caucuses. I'm not saying he's going to pull it out. I mean, Warren looks like she is kind of on the rise at this point. But Bernie, the fact that Bernie is saying that he's that far behind, say, Buttigieg or kind of tied with Buttigieg in something, I'm not so sure about. And I think, you know, again, the fact that the news came out right after the debate, right after the last debate, that Buttigieg has basically hired a Goldman Sachs folks to bring on to run his policy shop, right, and some other of these kind of Wall Street folks. I think that's going to start getting hammered on by Bernie and Warren, especially in upcoming debates. But.
Oh, yeah, I think Buttigieg is done. He's just hanging. He's low hanging fruit at this point, in my opinion. I'm not saying he's nothing but a feel good candidate.
But look,
I'm going to feel good about voting about myself and not worry about the problems going on in the world. And he makes me feel good about that warm and fuzzy. And even though he has no fucking experience. Like, I don't get this. Like this, I'm a mayor of a third class city, college town in a red state. So therefore, I should become president.
Look, I think you underestimate the power of that feel goodness. When it comes to national politics,
I mean, maybe like the McKinsey cult can help brand that brand.
Look, this is what I see, right? What I see movement like this. Biden was the one who was filling that lane before, right? He was the comfort candidate because people knew who he was. They associated with Obama, right? And he was the kind of Uncle Joe, despite the fact that Uncle Joe, we found out early in the campaign, was a little handsy when it came to things. And people, let's not forget about that. And so he was that feel-good candidate that people could think, this is what's going to bring me back to normal. The thing is that slowly but surely, as has been predicted by most folks, he's been saying like, oh, we need to get away from this guy because he can't even freaking campaign. And then they start worrying he's going to lose to Trump. So who's the one who brings a similar feeling forward? And I think that candidate is Buttigieg. And I think that is where you're going to see the rise of the super PACs, and you're going to see where these, you know, the donor class of the Democratic Party are going to start dumping their money. That's my belief.
Some unexperienced technocratic shithead, like that's who they want to bank on.
Dude, what was the
in order to do everything they can to preserve their fiefdoms?
Yes.
It's amazing. Like they're doing everything they can to preserve their fiefdoms. And to preserve their fucking, like, yeah. I mean, like, all these people are the union-busting liberals, pretty much.
Yes, well, look, effectively... Right, but look, effectively, this is how the campaign is going to be run. This is exactly what those folks are going to want to do. People are going to say, look, he's got no experience, right? What does he know about this stuff? He's moderate, right? And they're going to say, but Obama was inexperienced, and look what he brought us. Yeah. But, you know, look over. No, but Obama gave us national stature. That is how this is going to play out. It's going to be the but Obama.
Yeah.
Thing for Buttigieg. So I don't think he's done at all. I mean, I agree with you about the substance. Absolutely. Right. In terms of who that guy is. But I think that, you know, that's where the money's going to go. Because I think originally they wanted the money to go to Harris, and Harris's campaign is just collapsing on itself. In a way,
I don't know. Maybe we could pick Amy Klobuchar at this point.
Well, yeah, I'm telling you, Rachel Maddow has got a thing for Amy Klobuchar, which I just never understood. Like, had her on this week. I know this is far afield from what we were supposed to talk about, but I was like, had her on this week, and like, so you got a little bump in the polls. I'm like, a bump in the polls for what? 3 to 3.2? Right. I mean, she did take an increase in like donations and things like this, but I mean, come on. I mean, she's barely showing up on any of these polls. So I mean, I don't even.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Andrew Yang is polling at 5%.
Now Yang's the interesting candidate to me. I mean, I know that you hate Yang with a passion. I think Yang is probably one of the most interesting candidates in the race. I mean, again, on the substance level, like, yeah, you got $1,000 UBI, and that's it, right? You're going to basically roll back all of the social programs, right? There's no Medicare for all, right? Your $1,000 is going to be eaten up by healthcare premiums, right? So it's going to be a wash for you, and you're going to be worse off than you began with. So, but I think he's got energy. And I'll tell you this, is that from being on a college campus, I have been surprised at how much excitement there is for Yang. Right? I'm just saying. Right? There was a report that came out from, I was in Iowa. This was someone that called into the Majority Report like last week or something. And there was, it was Ohio. It was right around the debate. And the Yang Gang had the largest show of kind of supporters outside of the arena.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy to get supporters out there when you do nothing but cater to Reddit and 4chan trolls.
Well, there you go. All right. I'm just saying he's interesting for. I mean, look, I don't think he's got a shot in hell for getting the nomination, but I think it's he's very interesting as a new tendency within the party. So I'll leave it at that. More wildfires, crazy stuff that's going on out there. I just have to say, if you haven't seen the video of the pallbearer at Elijah Cummings' memorial service, basically refusing to shake the hand of Mitch McConnell, please do check down that little
little
graphic.
On him.
Oh my God! I mean,
good on him. I mean, yeah. I snubbed Tom Corbett once, so I kind of know that what that's like.
Yep.
I am all in favor of the snub.
Yeah, closest I ever got, to snubbing Tom Corbett. Snubbing Tom Corbett was standing behind him in the line at a diner while waiting to pay my check, but that was it. You know that diner that's up on what's that on Front Street, kind of North Front Street. You go past, you go past 81,
yeah.
And there's that one that's on the right hand side there, right by the there's a hotel, that one.
Yeah, the railroad tracks.
Yeah. I stood real close to him though, with my raging chicken hat on.
Just like fucking breathing over his neck.
Exactly.
Just like the awkward breathing.
Yeah, exactly. Like that. It was funny. But also the and then just lastly, and Sean kind of caught this right before we got on the Mack strike trucks, the Mack truck strike. It was basically they have an agreement.
Called off this morning. Yes, yep. They came into an agreement. What I read was Morning Call had a really good article. Basically, what they really went on strike for was to preserve their jobs, 3,500 jobs, and keep them in the U.S. and stop them from going to Mexico. The Volvo CEO mentioned the strike in a press conference this week in front of shareholders, I believe. And it seemed like they reached an agreement. So that's good news.
It's awesome. And I want to just add a personal note on that one. I want to thank all the folks from Kutztown's ABSCUF, our kind of a local union, who were out there on the line. They actually went out with them. I know my friend Mike listens to the podcast. I know Mike had brought out hoagies to folks on the line. One of my favorite quotes from his experience there was, according to Mike, is he was talking to this one guy. He went out to the line that was in the most like remote location to make sure that those folks got some food. And they're like, man, it was like hoagies, right? He's like, this is the most nutritious food we've had all week, right? It's like, man, people's running like donuts and pizza. Like, oh my God, they're like green stuff. It's just Mike's like, really, that's it? He's like, yeah. But so kudos to them, and special shout out to Amy Kennedy too, as well as who is our mobilization chair, who organized folks from ABSCUF KU to go out on the line, show the support for those folks at Mack Trucks.
Eugene DePasquale was on the line this weekend as well, so that was nice.
Excellent.
Yes. So and a bunch of House Dems and state senators. Senate Dem members from the areas also were out visiting. I saw support up on my social media feed all week coming from different representatives and different senators supporting the union members. So it's always good.
Awesome. And that's just a perfect, I think, kind of moment to go to a break, right? We'll transition into our PA focus. So I remind everybody that you become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress. Become a member as little as $5 a month. We'll be right back after this quick break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 2002. That was the day that working people of the United States lost one of their greatest champions in Washington. Two-term Minnesota Senator Paul Wellstone died tragically in a plane crash. The crash took place just 11 days before Election Day. Wellstone was running for his third term in office. His wife, daughter, three aides, and two pilots also died in the crash. Wellstone was known for fighting for those who didn't have a voice in the halls of power. The poor, the workers, the farmers, the seniors. He once famously said, "I'm here to represent the little fellers, not the Rockefellers." The most impactful legislation the senator passed was the Paul Wellstone Mental Health and Addiction Equality Act of 2007. It required insurance providers to treat mental health at the same level that they would provide for physical health care. When he died, the United Electrical, Radio, and Machine Workers of America remembered Wellstone as the strongest voice for America's working families in the United States Senate. AFSCME Local 34 wrote, "He was the best friend that AFSCME had in the U.S. Senate and supported us and the issues that affected working families." At a 10-year commemoration of his death, Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton called Wellstone the conscience of the Senate. In January, the AFL-CIO established the Wellstone Award. The award honors elected leaders who take a strong stand for workers' freedom to come together in unions and who fight for social and economic justice. Wellstone once said, "Politics is not about power. Politics is not about money. Politics is not about winning for the sake of winning. Politics is about the improvement of people's lives." We could sure use more senators like Paul Wellstone today. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chickens Out the Coop podcast. Yes, we're into our PA focus here. Take it away, Sean.
So, this week, nothing too much happening in Harrisburg.
Other than shouting into the wilderness?
Yeah, the screaming into the void. Yeah. So pretty much like Tuesday, there was a Charter Appeals Board meeting, which I did not get to, unfortunately. But there was a really nice write-up in the Penn Capital Star, also all day Tuesday. I'll get to that in a second. There were charter school hearings happening. A lot of charter school people are pissed off about Governor Wolf's executive order that he issued over the summer, and they pretty much have been crying nonstop since. And so there was a education hearing, and it's amazing where, like, you watch this stuff up close for a while. Like, committee hearings are typically places where you can actually hold powerful officials to account. Mm-hmm. You know, you see this a little bit happening with DC and stuff like that, but it is beyond infuriating watching Democratic senators on this committee just go off rambling nonsense for 20 minutes in front of every one of these people on these panels with charter school CEOs, and then ending it by saying that they appreciate the work the charter schools are doing in their districts.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you might only get this opportunity once or twice a year to, like, ask these people these questions, and you allot your time at the end when these panels by pandering to your fawning over your hometowns, and then which has absolutely rambling on stuff that's absolutely nothing to do with this hearing, and then just say, "Yeah, I appreciate the work you're doing."
Yeah, essentially, like, run out the clock, right?
Yeah. it's generational. You're seeing this with new senators coming in, but like Senator Lindsey Williams was actually asking questions, accountability questions too.
She's something, man. She really is.
Yeah, no, she's really good on ed policy. So the charter schools had their day on the Hill on Tuesday in the Senate, and then Charter Appeals Board met again, which, you know, if you've listened to the podcast, you've realized I've been following this for my job for the past year now, and it's still just as dysfunctional as the first time I went there.
So there's not like an arc of progress going on there.
No. So like the story in the Capital Star goes back over what we've talked about for the past few months dealing with the appeals board. There's a series of votes that happened that were not able to get settled because they were not action votes. This is a 7-person board. There are 6 people on the board. All the terms have expired besides Pedro Cortez. The people that are sitting on this board are there until replacement, which has to go through a nomination process with Governor Wolf, and then the Senate has to nominate these people. So now there's that. Now, 2 people had to recuse themselves again, which was Pedro Cortez, because Propel Charter Schools is trying to establish their own quasi-school district in Allegheny County. They have 14 charter schools, and they're all trying to consolidate them into one school district that operates parallel to the Allegheny, to those school districts that they're in. And that got denied, and they're suing the Department of Education. So Pedro Cortez cannot be participating in these votes. Down to 5 people. There's a woman whose kids went to Propel. She cannot do that because she's a conflict of interest. So down to 4 votes. And in order to have an action, you have to have a majority of the board.
Of the board, not of the people, the voting members, right?
Yes, not of the voting members.
Right, right, right.
So you have to get 4 votes one way or another. And the past 2 times, the vote was 3-1 to deny the appeal. And so at this point, this is coming in. This organization is coming back to Harrisburg. These people are coming out from fucking Pittsburgh for this hearing. And they are asking the Charter Appeals Board to deny them because they know how the vote's going to turn out. They're asking the one member who's a charter school shill and supporting them, who runs a charter school out in Satterton, like the one it's like right in your area. She keeps on voting for them to grant them the appeal instead of denying them the appeal. So it's a 3-1 thing. So you think about this, like this is all happening. So imagine, like, we all know our tax dollars are funding these schools.
Right.
So our tax dollars are funding the lawyers for the Department of Education to be there. You know, we're funding this board through the Department of Ed. We are also funding the tens of thousands of dollars that Propel is just wasting in legal fees, sending lawyers, getting hotels, getting food, and coming up with a fucking complaint once a month. I mean, and this is also really just fucked over their plans again. Because they made a decision back in the summer. Like, one of these decisions that happened in the summer had to have happened before August, whatever. And it was a 3-1 vote. It was a non-action vote.
Nice.
So they're stuck in purgatory, and it fucked over their plans for like the 2019 school year.
I get to travel and see the sights in Harrisburg quite a bit, though. That's good.
But no, it is. I mean, like, but it is. It is. Again, this can all be fixed if Governor Wolf would have kept on top of this board and not let every single fucking appointment resign. Like the caption for the Capital Star of Pedro Cortez's photo. Pedro Rivera. It said, Department of Education Secretary Pedro Rivera is the only member of the Charter Appeals Board whose term has not expired.
About says it right there, right?
And then, so we were talking, and they started talking. Roxbury was there. He walked in late, and the meeting has already ended at this point. And they were talking about the photo that we posted last month of everyone, no one there, just a row of empty microphones.
Yes. Oh, that was awesome. That was such a great picture. Yeah. They were talking about that?
Yes. But no, I mean, like, this is how much of a joke this fuck up this board has become. Like, yeah. So that was my Tuesday.
Nice. Well, happy Tuesday.
And then the next morning, Senator Mastriano and Representative Borowitz introduced the heartbeat bill.
Oh, God.
I had to, like, actually go into a corner at one point and cover my mouth with my sweater because that's how bad I was laughing.
Oh, my God. Oh,
And Roxbury came up to me and said something. And I am like doubled over with my camera. I'm like just doubled over laughing. I'm like, dude.
But your lens is clinking on the floor because it's like you're like laughing so hard.
I'm like, dude, I'm like, yeah, shut the fuck up. Don't
talk to me right now. I'm going to lose it.
But yeah, so they brought in Kathy Harper from Fox News.
An expert, in other words.
Yes. And like, what's amazing about these things, it's like how they use conservative black people for these events. Like, this is just a room of just straight up racist fucking white people. I mean, let's be honest here. There's if you have a Venn diagram of white nationalists and people who don't want women to get abortions,
you're basically looking at a circle.
Yes. Literally, like,
is that a sliver I see at the edge of that, or is that just like the border?
Oh no, it was a mess up.
Yeah, sorry, that's supposed to be erased. Indentation, but, like, left in the paper.
But it's so, like, she's speaking and her mother's there. Literally, there are only two African American people in the room besides a couple of the news reporters. And they're trying to talk about how they're doing this to save black babies, while like one state rep just gets up there and says the most racist fucking shit possible. It's just like, you're just watching this, like, and they're saying this in front of like a bunch of old white people. There's a couple people from the Women's Law Project that are recording it. And then there's kids there as well. And it's just like they're using children as props. Mastriano's wearing his fucking war medals on his jacket, which is against protocol.
War medals. Like, what the? What do you wear your war medals into, like, a hearing on an abortion bill? I mean, you're going warrior of God.
So he
shit?
Was part of, like, a cavalry.
Oh, God.
Like the second cavalry or something like that.
So like, he had the cavalry of angels. Is that what he supposed to be doing there?
And then he was wearing spurs.
No. Yes. No. No.
Yes, no, I
posted. You are not, no, that's not true.
Yes. I posted a picture online. Yes,
oh my
I have a picture.
God. You have got to be kidding me. He was wearing spurs.
Yes, let me, I will, here, okay. Go online. I'm going to send you a picture of it right now.
Oh, my God. You have got to be kidding me.
If my Gmail ever loads. Okay, here.
That is unbelievable. That is.
Yeah, no,
So did he actually draw attention to it? Did he say he was wearing spurs, too, as well, just in case anybody missed
it? No, he actually he legit wears spurs on the regular in the Capitol.
On the regular?
Yes.
My God.
Roxbury was telling me Roxbury pointed out to me, he's like, he wears spurs, and I'm like, what? He's just like, before we go into this, he's like, Mastriano walks around wearing spurs all the time. All right, I'm sending you the photo for now.
Oh my God. Spurs, and he's got his cavalry medals on.
Yes.
In breach of protocol. Oh my God. That is one effed up occurrence. Oh my God. Oh my God. Whatever.
He's wearing spurs over dress shoes.
I guess he's really proud of those spurs. Yeah, he doesn't even have on like cowboy boots. I mean, they're freaking dress shoes. You know what it looks like? Is like if
he's wearing a suit that's like three sizes
too
large.
Big, right? Yeah, so it's all like falling off him. He's got pins that are these medals that are seemingly pinned randomly across his like thing. It looks like, you know, like a kid dressing up for like Halloween, right? He's got dress shoes with I've zoomed in even better now. Dress shoes with spurs on them, right?
Wish it was. Really, it would have been better if he was just wearing wingtips at this point.
Well, it's like, I mean, I expected when you said spurs. I mean, I was like, okay, well, you know, okay, he's got the cowboy boots on. He doesn't even that. I mean, they're like laced up shoes, freaking spurs. Oh my God, Sean, I don't know.
That's, or maybe like they're like a leg brace to keep his knees in order, and he has like polio, and it's like an old fashioned. I don't know. Like,
that's a spur. You can see it clearly.
Like Forrest Gump.
That is like, fucking... I mean, that's what I thought. I mean, initially, I was like, look, if you look at, if you don't know and you just kind of glance down, it, that's what I thought. You're just like, oh, maybe it was one of those leg braces or something. But those are spurs. You can see them. Nice camera lens you got there.
I got that one for $150.
There you go. There you go. Cha-ching! It makes it worth it right there. Oh, my God. Well, I mean, if there's good news about this, it's that this is probably doesn't have a chance of hell of passing anything. And the governor's
veto.
Yeah, the governor is certainly going to veto this thing. But it's all the more like, you know, once again, you know, the necessity of remaining vigilant on this stuff, because these people will, they have no shame. Right. Clearly. I mean, freaking like rando metal spur wearing dude says. Right. So, I mean, that's clear.
Oh, and you know, what's also funny. Like these same people, these pro-lifers, they had Diamond and Silk speaking at their.
Of course they did.
At their yearly conference, their 40th anniversary. Yeah.
These people. I mean, I don't even know how like a brain like that operates. Like, you know, you just think about like the roots that neurons have to fire in order to put all that stuff together in one substance.
On whose end?
On these freaking crazy people.
Right? Diamond, I mean, and Silk ends, or like the pro-life people?
Well, both. We'll throw them all in together. I mean, just like how in any sense that makes that the neurons are firing in such a way that it gives some semblance or some illusion of coherency to the way that the world works. That's the way these people are. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Right. So anyways, well, that's one heck of a week right there, Sean.
And then I went to Eugene DePasquale, had a town hall the other night. It was really nice. Like 50 people showed up. It was at Widener Law School. And a couple of Republican trackers showed up.
Dun, dun, dun! Look for the memes, folks.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure they were hard to pick out, right?
No, not really.
They didn't come in incognito?
Yeah, no, they weren't dressed like me.
No.
For me, like when I go to those things, I wear t-shirts, jeans, beat up jeans, and boots.
Yeah,
to fit in. Like, you know what I mean.
You don't try to be a Chris Christie impersonator.
No.
Like that.
Nor do I
dude.
Show up with an all right haircut.
Yeah, there you go. Well, get your roid on, man.
I did go back to the gym this morning for the first time in like a few weeks.
Oh, well, so. That's good. Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. I had I was at this morning. I was actually at the I could talk about this in the last call, but I'll mention it. I was at my kids have like the Race for Education. It's the big fundraiser that the school does every year, and so we had one this morning, and then my son's this afternoon. So the podcast is kind of like the sweet spot in between. So cool. All right. So anything else going on around the state?
No, nothing else.
No, I'm going to be looking forward to ABSCUF. The one thing I have to say is ABSCUF has released not its tentative agreement yet. We are still being told as members that there is a agreement in principle that they can't share too many details with the members because it's secret, apparently. But ABSCUF president Ken Mash did come to Kutztown, as I mentioned before, and we're all still waiting here, so we're going to see. It's going to be really interesting to see what goes on. That's all I know. There's a lot of, say, newer faculty in particular that are starting to get really nervous about what's going to happen, and some people who are in different programs are, at least at Kutztown and some other schools, are starting to hear things from their administrators that seem to suggest that there may be some programmatic consolidation in the works. But you don't know, because this could just all be rumors, because we don't know details, or we might see a sea change in what's happening here in the Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education. But we shall see. Who knows? All right. That'll just about do it for today's PA Focus. When we come back, we're going to get into this week's last call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back right after this. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting, and commentary to the interwebs.
are long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. It's our last call. We talk tech news, space news, beer news, and anything else we feel like talking about that is kind of off the beaten track a little bit. A couple things I want to put on front and center, just in terms of the space slash tech news thing. Really cool thing this week. Google AI Quantum is like it's one of their research labs. They work with University of California, Santa Barbara. And they've been working on developing a quantum computer. And I'm not even going to try to pretend that I can explain quantum computing to you. I have watched several videos explaining it multiple times, and it stays in my brain for about 15 minutes, and then I can't recall it again because it's just complex. And it basically has to do with the fact that we all know this, computers, right? They're binary systems, right? So you have you have a one and you have a zero, right? And that's kind of basically how everything's organized. So it's either it's on or it's off. And then that's how the silicon computers are built. And then you have the chips that are built all around with these binary codings. And through those kind of binary codings, we process information. With quantums, right, with a quantum computer, you actually have these two particles. And each of them can have an on-off switch, right? An on or an off. A one or a zero, right? But because there's two and each of them have that, there's actually four combinations. So instead of just having like two combinations and on or off, you actually have four combinations, and then you put these circuits together and that basically increases the speed of the computations. How? I'm not even going to try. But the important thing here is that the reason why they're trying to develop that is because they believe that if they're able to get this system to work, that you're going to obtain this thing they call quantum supremacy. Like, so in other words, the more of these little quantum bits that you add to the system, the faster it's going to get. The problem that had been happening up until now is they would start adding these different circuits, and the speed would go up, it would increase the computation, and then it would flatline, and then it would drop off. They couldn't figure it out. They recalibrated this whole thing, and now they've got it to do this to the point where, and the paper that they released and published this past week, they say that they have an incredibly complex math problem that has just takes huge computational resources in order to solve. And the claim was that today's top supercomputers would take about 10,000 years simply to process and solve this this particular equation, do the computations necessary to come to an answer for that. Like I said in the at the beginning, that in the introduction today, is that IBM has kind of disputed that a little bit, says no, we're probably doing about 3,000 years. Okay, that's still 3,000 years, and the quantum computer could do it rapidly, immediately, practically, right? So if you think about that just in terms of speed, that's crazy. The other thing is, you're talking about these things are potentially kind of small. You put these things in devices, this should be just absolutely crazy stuff. So that was a huge milestone. So you're going to probably see some of that coming out more and more. But if this precedes anything like what happened when they first were developing the kind of silicon chips and the personal computing, this could be just insane. So there's that. This morning also, NASA Chief Administrator Jim Bridenstine was talking about the Artemis moon mission. They are saying that is now slated for 2024. They are planning on not only are they kind of going bringing humans back to the moon, but they're ensuring that at least one of those astronauts that goes back to the moon is going to be a woman.
Which is why they debuted their new suits last week, with a woman kind of modeling those new suits, which is an astronaut modeling those suits, which is great. I'll give you an update next week once I'm able to kind of look at what they actually talked about, and how they're going to want to make this happen. SpaceX has had a lot of recent moves where they're testing their crew capsule. There's been some setbacks on the Amazon front and on the Boeing front for their capsules to be ready to go for lunar missions, but they seem to be kind of moving straight ahead on this one. So more on that a little bit next week. And today's Free Will Brews releases, yes, cranberry wheat. Yep, it is now, after a delay, it is there. It is definitely there. I've got pictures. If you click on the links in here, you can see pictures of them moving pallets of the cans of cranberry wheat, so it's ready. It's available at both locations. And tomorrow, this is one I've been really looking forward to. The one thing that Free Will has been kind of lacking on has been on their stouts, right? They really have a more of a sour focus and some IPAs and some wheat beers and things like this, but not too many stouts. They're slated to change that this year, and their first release is one that's called Sharing Size. It's got a great label on it. It's all perfect for Halloween, all kind of demonish and stuff. But it is an imperial oatmeal stout with chocolate, peanut butter, and milk sugar. And they say it is a candy stout designed for an adult treat on Halloween, right? So it's kind of a good release time. And it comes in at 10.4 ABV, so it packs a little punch. And Sunday, the Sour Sunday, I think it runs from, say, 12 to 9 or something like this. You can check it out. There's a link in the show notes today. There's going to be 12 sours on tap. If you click on the Sour Sunday, too, you'll get the list of what they're going to have on tap. And they've got three new sours that they're debuting, one called Carmen Miranda, another one called Bearded Phantom. And they have a vintage release, and this is kind of the cool thing they call it their all-time favorite. I call it my all-time favorite. It's a fantastic sour. It's called Blood and Guts. They basically saved some, and apparently the brewmaster has been kind of keeping some kind of in a special stash. So this has been kind of aged extra long, and they're kind of bringing out some of those bottles for sale at both locations too as well on Sour Sunday. So kind of check them out too as well. I know I just can't wait to get my hands on that Imperial Oatmeal Stout, and I hope I'm not getting my hopes up too much. I hope it turns out decent. The fact is I've been spoiled because of Sean introduced me to Pizza Boys Stouts, and I have yet to find a stout that kind of really rivals their stuff. So, gotta say. So, hey, anything else in news and blues, Sean?
Nothing too much. I bought a crock pot a few weeks ago.
Nice crock pot.
Yes.
Or wait, in the parlance of the day, you mean you bought a slow cooker?
Yes, I bought a slow cooker.
Have you been using it?
Yes. It's amazing how much I've been using it. I bought it a couple weeks ago. Like, I want to do it for I made a couple of big stews in it.
Yep.
Right?
That's
like, so I made
great.
Well, so I made a beef stew, mm-hmm. which is the first thing I did, just something simple.
Yep.
And then over the weekend, last weekend, I did a chicken Alfredo. So what I did was I went to the market because we have a really good butcher shop. So I got a chicken breast there. They get really good meats there, and it's expensive. So one chicken breast was $5.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was also a pound and a half.
Yeah.
So which isn't too bad, but. And then I got some to add some flavor to it. I got some peppercorn smoked bacon. Yeah,
that sounds great.
Yeah, so I cut up a couple strips of bacon, put that in it, and it came out really good. And then this past weekend, I made a pulled pork shoulder.
That's what I was going to ask you. That was before I got off. I was going to say, have you made pulled pork yet?
Yeah,
that's you can't beat it. And talk about something that's simple and tastes freaking good.
Yeah, and I love.
What'd you use
pork
for sauce?
Actually, I did not use any sauce. I just made three quarters of a cup of a water and a quarter cup of a vinegar.
Vinegar,
apple vinegar.
So more like a kind of like North
gravy.
Carolina and yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I rubbed it down in a Cajun rub, which gave it some nice. Yeah. So I had the rub sitting on for about an hour before I started cooking it.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. And then I've just used it to cook some potatoes and carrots and stuff like that. So it's I need to save money by stop eating out so much. And this is probably going to help me out doing it. It's because it's like you're going to enjoy grilled chicken so much, which is what I was. But no, I like chicken, but now it's like I can actually like do shit with it. So.
Yeah, you know what? I'll send you a few recipes, right? That are some of my say go tos. I mean, things like chicken cacciatore, for example, right? It's like it's a pretty simple recipe. There's another one that's it's called like a hunter's stew, which kind of is like a poultry based stew and things like this. That again, simple to make but really really good. I'll send you some stuff just so you got some other things to try out. That has been some things that have worked for me because. Lord knows, I need more time.
But no, I definitely want to. It's like I'm already saving money by using it. Like, so, yeah, it's. And now it's like, oh, I have a bunch of potatoes sitting around. Now I can just like cut up a bunch of potatoes. And I actually bought a good kitchen knife a couple weeks ago, too.
That makes a huge difference. I'm telling you.
Yeah. I spent like $70 on a Santoku or like whatever it is.
Japanese
like
knife. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, from Bed Bath & Beyond. Because I've been getting bombarded with Bed Bath & Beyond coupons.
I bet you are. Yeah, but so do you have a good paring knife, too, as well?
Yes.
Okay, good. So I was going to say, if you got the good kitchen knife now, said I always say to people, good paring knife is your absolute like second thing that you need to get. But
yeah, and I also made sure like the blade – that whip is bolt went back into was part of the handle. The handle was part of the blade.
That's what you want. Yep.
So it wasn't like
What I got.
Yep. The handle is part of the knife.
I had I had that one that's I forget what mine was. I think it was like a Wusthof paring knife, and it's I loved it, but since something gave way in the, it was the same thing. It was like you had the blade that went all the way back, right? It was kind of a solid blade, but then you had the handle that was kind of like riveted or attached kind of like, you know, through it. So it was like all the way through, and somehow those rivets got loose and started kind of like giving way to it. And I finally had to say goodbye to that knife, and I still have yet to replace it with one that I like. I've got a couple ones that are, they do the job, but they're not the good paring knife, but.
Yeah. So, like what I'm gonna do today is like I when I went home a couple weeks ago, I went to Rikers. Have you ever heard of Rikers?
I've heard of it. Yeah. I just.
It's a German deli. They got some of the best like German sausages. So like I bought a few Thuringers.
Okay.
Last week, when I went home, I spent like $25 on fucking sausage there. Sorry, that's where my priorities lay.
Yeah.
With like German food and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And it's only like 15 minutes away from my home. It's also in Kevin Boyle's district, which is fun fact.
Fun fact.
but it's a great whatchamacallit. It's a good German deli.
Yeah.
Definitely recommend going to. And today I have a couple of Austrian links sitting out, defrosting. So that's what I'm going to cook it with.
Nice. Well, that sounds good. That's a good plan.
I need to save money from eating out.
There you go. What I got to do right now is I got to finish my deck. Right? If you remember, I spent like 4 days like doing a deck, and I got as far as I could, and then, you know, kind of my little break over my little fall break ended, and so now we've got kind of like a half a deck that still needs to be put up. So I'm looking to spend the time on that. So this weekend we do some of that. I'm going down. My daughter's got a travel game down in Fairmont Park, actually, on Saturday. And we'll see what we get. I was going to work all day Sunday, but it looks like Sunday's going to be a washout with rain. So we shall see.
I think I'm going to get a Barnyard sign for my window.
Ooh, there you go.
Yeah, put up in my front window.
There you go.
Let people know my...
Announce it to the world. This is what I got. I got my shirt on. Say, like college for all, Medicare for all, jobs for all, justice for all. That's what I'm wearing to my the kids' school thing.
Nice.
Yeah. So cool. All right, man. Well, hey, anything else for the good of the order?
That's everything.
All right. That's it all. How do we know what I just said? That's it all? I've never said that before in those terms, but whatever. All right. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. I want to remind you that you can become a member of Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/RCPress. Cool. It's $5 a month, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week.
See ya!